For what's Universal Time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Obama is in Laos, the first American president to visit the landlocked Southeast Asian nation, for summits of Southeast Asian and East Asian nations. Before departing the G20 summit site in China Monday, he told reporters he hopes to improve relations with Laos by helping resolve the unexploded ordnance issue following the Indochina War.
We should help. And my expectation is that in our meetings over the course of several days, that we'll be able to provide some really concrete assistance that ensures that innocent kids who are running through a field, or a farmer that's trying to clear a field, or a business that's trying to get set up, that they're not endangered by the possibility of an explosion.
Mr. Obama will also deliver a speech on Asia policy and is expected to urge congressional approval of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Pact.
And I have yet to hear a persuasive argument from the left or the right as to why we wouldn't want to create a trade framework that raises labor standards, raises environmental standards.
The TPP is opposed by both U.S. major party presidential nominees. The Italian Coast Guard said rescuers recovered the bodies of 15 migrants in search and rescue operations. It also saved 2,700 lives off the coast of Libya seeking passage to Europe. At least 23 were killed in a weekend blaze at a prison near Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. The fire erupted Saturday at the high-security Kilinto prison, which holds many of those arrested in an ongoing crackdown on months of protests in the Oromo and Amhara regions. An investigation is underway. This is VOA News. A car bomb blast struck central Kabul late Monday, hours after two other explosions near the defense ministry killed 24 people. More than 90 were wounded. Gunfire could be heard, with an interior ministry official saying a guest house could have been a target in the latest explosion. The first two were claimed by the Taliban, and RAND Corporation analyst Jonah Blank said it underscores a shift away from Taliban attacks on security forces.
If one looks at the pattern of the recent Taliban attacks, they have generally been targeting soft targets. They have not been going after hardened military bases, as they had done in the past.
The bombings come less than 2 weeks after a gunman attacked the American University in Kabul, killing at least 13 people. The UN Security Council is to take up the latest North Korean missile launches Tuesday. The North fired three ballistic missiles into the Sea of Japan from a site along its east coast. Leader Kim Jong-un Tuesday called for continued missile and nuclear development. RAND Corporation analyst Bruce Bennett said Pyongyang views itself as a regional nuclear power.
Kim Jong-un is offended by not being invited to the G20. After all, he is a great nuclear power now. To us, that sounds ironic, but to him, I think he believes that now that he has nuclear weapons, he should be treated as a peer of China and the United States.
Japan's defense ministry said the missiles fell into its exclusive economic zone, calling it a grave national security threat. The U.S. denounced the latest firings as reckless. A series of bombings claimed by Islamic State killed at least 24 people across Syria Monday. They struck government-controlled areas of Homs and Tartus, the Kurdish-held city of Hasaka, and around areas of Damascus. The bombings occurred as Presidents Obama and Putin, meeting on the sidelines of the G20 summit in China, failed to find agreement on how to end the violence. Mr. Putin said he still hopes an agreement can be reached in coming days on improving and intensifying cooperation against terrorist organizations to bring the five-year conflict to an end. China has underscored its resolute opposition to any form of Hong Kong independence following legislative election results showing pro-democracy candidates winning 30 of 70 seats. That gives them the power to veto bills by the pro-Beijing majority. The World Health Organization said Monday Nigeria has reported a third case of polio in northeast Borno State. Two other cases reported last month is a setback in the country's effort to eradicate the crippling disease that targets young people. Zambia's highest court dismissed an effort by defeated opposition presidential candidate Hakainde Hichilema to annul last month's election result. That clears the way for incumbent President Edgar Lungu's inauguration next week. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is due in Libreville today as Jinping calls for a stay-home strike.
The thing is, he urges Gabonese people to stay home as the current situation is not over, and for security reasons, it is better for the people, you know, to not go out or stay too long outside home.
Paul Marie Gonjou represents opposition leader Jean Ping's party on the Gabon Elections Commission. UN firefighters in the DRC face threats in doing their job. South Sudan opposition parties welcome their government's decision to allow the deployment of a regional protection force. And Zambia's Constitutional Court throws out an opposition petition to annul last month's election results.
Zambia is now enlisting itself as one of the top contenders to lead that group of failed states, that group of rogue states, that group of disorganized countries where the rule of law becomes alien.
Cornelius Mwitwa is a member of parliament and deputy spokesman of the opposition UPND of Zambia. And nightlife in Senegal's troubled Casamance region comes to life. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A supporter of Gabonese opposition leader Jean Ping says UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and an unnamed number of African leaders are expected in Libreville today, Tuesday, to mediate that country's post-election crisis. Over the weekend, Mr. Ban called on both opposition parties and President Ali Bongo Ondimba to exercise restraint in dealing with the violence that erupted after President Bongo was declared winner of the August 27th election. This comes as Mr. Ping has called for a nationwide strike to protest what he believes is a fraudulent re-election of President Bongo. Paul Marie Gonjou represents Mr. Ping's party on the Gabon Elections Commission. He says Mr. Ping is not calling for a strike, but rather he wants for the Gabonese people to stay home until the crisis is resolved.
I didn't hear at any time Mr. Ping speaking of general strike. The thing is, he urges Gabonese people to stay home as the current situation is not over. I mean, the crisis is not over, and for security reasons, it is better for the people, you know, to not go out or stay too long outside home.
That in itself is a call for strike if the people are to stay home. Is he saying that the situation is still violent?
The situation is still violent because in some Libreville areas, we still have some turmoil, and it is not too safe to be outside home because when you go to downtown Libreville, I mean, it's safe because the army, I mean, the police just around the downtown, you know, securing downtown. But outside downtown, the situation is still, you know, I won't say dangerous, but is quite bad.
Paul, what do you think has been the reaction of the ordinary Gabonese? Are they listening to Mr. Jinping to stay home, or are they going to work anyway?
Today, we just realized that not even 25% of the Gabonese workers, you know, went to their job because they feel by themselves that the situation is still, you know, quite dangerous, and they prefer to be prudent and stay home.
What do you think should we be expecting? What should be expected for Tuesday morning? Are the Gabonese people going to stay home, listen to Mr. Jinping, or what?
I think that they will stay home. I mean, you'll have some people going outside, you know, like for the reason I gave you earlier. But what you should know also is that tomorrow in Libreville, we have some African head of state with the General Secretary of the United Nations, you know, coming in Libreville for a kind of mediation between the two parties, the opposition, you know, represented by Jinping and the current head of state. They will try to find a solution to the crisis. And we'll have in the city, you know, plenty of security forces, you know, deployed in the city, and so it will increase, you know, this kind of feeling of, you know, the situation being, you know, dangerous.
The results were very close. So how does Mr. Ping feel? Does he still feel that he should have won the election?
At this stage, the problem is not Mr. Ping. The problem is the Gabonese people. The Gabonese people, I mean, they went to vote, and massively they vote to sanction Mr. Ali Bongo and to vote for Mr. Ping. For the information, I know that Mr. Ping won this election by at least 20 points difference between him and Mr. Bongo.
Paul Marie Gonju represents opposition leader Jean Ping's party on the Gabon Elections Commission. You're speaking with me from the capital, Libreville. A spokesman for Zambia's opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, says the country is headed toward a dictatorship where the rule of law is foreign. This comes as the Constitutional Court over the weekend threw out a petition brought by the UPND to annul last month's election results, in which incumbent President Edgar Lungu was declared the winner. Three of the court's five judges ruled that a 14-day deadline for hearing the petition had expired by midnight on September 2nd. But Cornelius Mwitua, a member of parliament and deputy spokesman of the UPND, says the judges contradicted themselves.
For now, I can confirm with you, it is a state of shock, but one where you are beginning to create an understanding that we now need to begin to understand that we live in a different Zambia, one which is lawless, one which is at the level of these countries that we have been seeing in the region, where leaders have proclaimed themselves without even being voted in. They have been ruling with impunity. Zambia is now enlisting itself as one of the top contenders to lead that group of failed states, that group of rogue states, that group of disorganized countries where the rule of law becomes alien.
It seems to me, listening to you, you and the UPND, Mr. Hichilema, you feel aggrieved by the court's ruling. But the judge who rendered the decision said that you, the petitioners, had yourselves to blame for repeatedly raising preliminary issues and taking too long. So do you blame yourself?
There is no way we can blame ourselves because, like I've indicated before, it is the same judge who indicated that this case will be heard up to 8th September and indicated that the actual trial was going to begin on Friday last week and that the trial would run up to 8th September. Now, the same judge comes back and says, no, I misdirected myself in making that ruling a few days ago. Meanwhile, by misdirecting herself and in essence misdirecting the court, the lawyers operated on the basis and labored on the belief, mistaken legal belief, that this matter, we have ample time up to next week because the court has pronounced itself on this particular matter that this case will go on up to 8th.
Mr. Mwitua, as the judge said again, there are many stakeholders here, investors in Zambia. Everybody's watching what was supposed to take place. And so the more this continues, I think the judge implies that this is going to hurt the country as a whole. So what's next for the UPND?
Well, what next for the UPND? First of all, the leadership has released a summary statement to say that they are conferring with their lawyers, they are consulting with their lawyers, and they will be informing the nation and, I guess, the globe as to what the next position is.
Cornelius Mwitua is a member of parliament and deputy spokesman of the opposition UPND of Zambia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Tuesday, September 6th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Let's give a shout-out to listeners of our affiliate station, Radio Life, in Lofa County, Liberia. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. UN firefighters in the Democratic Republic of Congo have repeatedly come under attack this year while trying to respond to house fires in the eastern city of Goma. The UN mission, known as MONUSCO, is not... responsible for extinguishing fires except at its own installations. But in the absence of other emergency services, it is often the first number that victims call. But as Nick Long reports from Goma, MONUSCO firemen say police are not providing the security they need to respond rapidly.
MONUSCO's fire security unit in Goma is headed by Ivan Melchev, a Bulgarian.
2015, my unit and myself, we were threatened on 5 fires. For 2016, we were threatened on 6 fires. I was threatened with a machete. Stones were thrown on my people. One of my people was injured by a thrown stone.
Milchev has repeatedly called for the local authorities to assure security at fire scenes. He says despite promises, the situation has not improved. And sometimes, he says, the local police, or PNC, do not even make promises.
Chief of police in Goma called us to respond to a local fire. When I asked him, is it secure and safe if we respond, his answer was, no, I cannot provide you with security. Sometimes local PNCs are showing up at the fire scene. Instead of trying to control the crowd, they're trying to loot and steal from the fire scene.
Milchev gave journalists the dates and locations of recent fires where his team has come under attack. One of these was Malinga Avenue in the Mabanga Sud neighbourhood of Goma. The chief of a neighbouring avenue, Modest Bahati, said the MONUSCO fire team tends to arrive at fires after some delay, and this can cause an angry reaction. But that is better than nothing, says this man. He says he has seen the MONUSCO fire engine arrive. They often come to fires, and even if they arrive after some delay, at least they get there. As for the police reaction, Bahati says often the national police are cautious because when they arrive at a fire, they are liable to be stoned along with the MONUSCO firefighters. The trouble is, he says, the police squads that are sent out are not big enough to control angry crowds. A journalist asked Milchev whether MONUSCO should not give him more support to speed up reaction to fires.
I don't like this question, and the answer is, even in the future, my team will respond late because we are not Goma Fire Department. We are supposed to provide help to the local fire department, but I don't see them on the fire scene.
Two water trucks and a fireman's truck belonging to the municipal fire service can be seen outside Goma's town hall. Two of these vehicles have shattered windscreens. The situation is somewhat better in the capital, Kinshasa, says Milchev, but in other major towns like Bukavu, Kisangani or Bunia, there is either no municipal fire engine or only one.
And by the way, I managed to find some pictures from 1956. Local fire department was existing in Kisangani, well equipped. Why it is not existing now?
VOA approached the town hall for a comment, but was told the person authorized to speak was not immediately available. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
Opposition political parties in South Sudan have welcomed the government's decision to allow the deployment of a regional protection force in the country. The leader of the minority in the National Assembly, Ayonte Adigo, says the administration of President Salva Kiir has finally understood the need for the deployment of regional troops after repeatedly rejecting the idea. Michael Atit reports from Juba.
Ayonte Adigo says the government's consent is welcome relief to tens of thousands of South Sudanese living in fear.
The majority of people in South Sudan wanted this post to come because they have seen that the government has failed to protect them miserably. That is why most of them ran into the POC camps. Most of them went outside the country. So the announcement that there are posts coming here was a blessing to them that they are coming to rescue them. And it is good that the Security Council members have come to clarify this point that they are not an invading force.
Ayonte says once the regional protection force is deployed, the government should cooperate with it so that the force can carry out its mandate. He says the government must restore the trust that was lost with its citizens.
If the people have no trust in their government and the government is shouting that let these people come out from the POC camps, how do they come out when you did not give good gestures so that they believe in you?
The leader of the United Democratic Party also welcomed the move by the government to accept the troop deployment. Stewart Soroba says once security is provided, people can once again cultivate their crops and feed themselves.
people should have embarked on agriculture. You have seen people have decided to have an agriculture, but things are not going the way people want it. So I expect something, a change may happen. I am not God. I'm not anybody. But a person who comes to help is giving a lending hand to stop a war in your country. He's most welcome.
Peter Mayan, chairman of the People's Liberal Party, says the presence of the Regional Protection Force will also encourage various armed opposition groups to lay down their arms.
The government achieved a lot. One of it, it helped the government to stabilize the security, of which the government couldn't do themselves. And the foreign troops will rebuild the confidence of the various armed oppositions to leave the armed oppositions and come back in the government.
Mayan says the government should now focus on opening its doors to all armed opposition and start the process of unifying the army.
What the government need now is to create enough space. That means they have to give amnesty to the various armed oppositions in the various part of the country, to allow them to come in so that they can start investing or they can start working on a democratic process.
The SPLM in opposition also welcomed the government's change of heart. SPLM IO spokesman Mabior Garang issued a statement praising the government on its decision, calling it an important step in resolving contradictions that have emerged in the implementation of the agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan. Mabior wants the government and UNMISS to involve the SPLM IO in any decisions for the deployment of the protection force. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Cameroon's academic school year kicked off yesterday, Monday, but not for an estimated 100,000 children in the north of the country who have been displaced by the Boko Haram conflict. Schools in host communities are overcrowded, and the construction of more classrooms has been delayed by insecurity. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the story from Marua in northern Cameroon.
16-year-old Lara Salamatu fled her home in Kerawa on the border with Nigeria 3 months ago. She tried to enroll in the government high school in Marua.
Nous sommes arrivés de Kerawa. Nous sommes venus fréquenter ici.
She says she came with her classmates from Kerawa to study in Marua, but unfortunately, they have overcrowded classes and few teachers. She says she wants to continue her education and see the school conditions improved. Authorities recently shut her school in Kerawa alongside 160 others as a result of cross-border raids by Boko Haram insurgents. Salamatu is now one of at least 100,000 displaced children whose education has been cut off this year, according to the government. Classes have begun here at this French-speaking government elementary school in Marua, but about 500 pupils are still waiting outside. Teacher Nja Clementine says they are not admitting children whose parents have not paid the school fees. She says although many of those waiting have been displaced from conflict zones, the school has not received any instructions from the government to admit them.
There are so many parents that rush and die minute to come and pay. Maybe they never had money. Some are begging if we can allow the children to go to class without paying. But while those that had paid since are in class, there's effective teaching. Teachers are teaching. They prepared their lessons since last week.
Some government teachers transferred to areas at risk of Boko Haram attacks have been refusing to go there since 2014, further straining resources at schools. Across the border in northern Nigeria, Boko Haram has targeted government schools and school children specifically. Cameroon's Minister of Basic Education, Yusuf Adija Alim, says the government is working hard to build more classrooms in safer localities.
Disons que les régions touchées par le terrorisme et l'insécurité.
She says the government of Cameroon has instituted an emergency plan for border localities. She says they have constructed over 200 classrooms, 87 buildings with toilets, and 56 water wells. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Marua, Cameroon.
Life is returning to normal in southern Senegal after 3 decades of a low-intensity rebellion by Casamance rebels in the region. Many visitors who once feared coming to this part of the country are once again starting to visit, especially during this time of the year when there are several fun seekers. Alpha Diallo reports from the regional capital.
It is on a chilly Saturday night in Sikensho, the regional capital of the southern Senegalese province of Casamance. The streets are packed with phone seekers and the nightclubs and restaurants are teeming with people. The streets are surprisingly busy at night despite 3 decades of rebellion in this region of Senegal. Driving along the busy Route de France overlooking the Atlantic Ocean, my first port of call is the famous bar and restaurant Le Casa, which is situated in the heart of Sikensho. It is frequented mostly by middle-class professionals, members of the international community, or simply what they refer to here as VIPs. Saint-Pierre Sambo is the proprietor of the La Casa.
The restaurant qui presque parmi les restaurants les plus anciens. Ça fait maintenant 15 ans qu'il existe.
He says the bar and restaurant is among the oldest businesses in Sikensho. More than 15 years old. He says they always get a good number of customers because of their good menu. But today, most of their customers are from neighboring Guinea-Bissau. At the restaurant, I caught up with a Ghanaian national, Tunde Asari, who seems to be enjoying himself. I asked him why he likes the restaurant La Casa.
Yes, I do like coming here because the place is very nice hygienically. And the staffs are very friendly. The reception is good. And, you know, the food also is hygienically all right.
When it comes to dancing the night away, the most thrilling place to is the Ruby's nightclub. It is owned by the late Senegalese football legend Francois Bokande. The nightclub is well equipped with modern musical facilities. This time of the year is the peak of the summer holidays in Sikensho, and the clubs are virtually jam-packed every night. This young girl in her early 20s who didn't tell me her name told me why she likes the Ruby's nightclub.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening, mister.
Why do you come to Ruby's nightclub?
I come here with my friends. You know, it is holidays now in Senegal. I like Ruby's nightclub because the music is very good.
There are other thrilling places for fun seekers as well. For example, the Place de Gaulle is worth visiting because of its diverse culture. On this special night, the Jola host community and their Seri cousins from the western fringes of Senegal are displaying their culture and tradition. Life may be returning to normal in Sikensho, but the 3 decades of hostilities in the region have taken their toll. A 6-year ceasefire has been put in place since the arrival of President Macky Sall in 2012. Now, residents of this beautiful region, including Cherno Diallo, want to see an end to this long crisis.
We, the Casamance people, want to see an end to this rebellion. This is one of the oldest rebellions in Africa, and yet there is no winner. We want to see peace and happiness reigning in this region now.
Alpha Diallo for VOA News, Sikensho, Southern Senegal.
That's it for this Tuesday, September 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very nice day.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenor Modu will look at a controversial scholarship program in KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa, which requires young women to abstain from sex as a way to fight HIV, AIDS, and teen pregnancy. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.